Welcome to Yale Cancer Center Answers with Drs. Ed Chu and Ken Miller. I'm Bruce Barber. Dr. Chu is Deputy Director and Chief of Medical Oncology at Yale Cancer Center, and Dr. Miller specializes in pain and palliative care. If you'd like to join the discussion, you can contact the doctors directly. The address is canceranswers@yale.edu, and the phone number is 1-888-234-4YCC. This evening, Ed Chu speaks with Dr. Louis Denny, Director of Clinical Research at Pfizer Oncology.
I'm trained in medical oncology in Belgium, as you hear. English is not my first language. And I moved to the States in 98, was first at the Cancer Therapy of Research Center in San Antonio, and joined Pfizer in 2001. I joined Pfizer when its drug development group in oncology was still in its infancy, and was able to join them at a time where some of the early products were being developed.
So are you involved in and focused on a particular project, or do you kind of help to oversee, you know, a number of different cancer drugs that are being developed at Pfizer?
We largely work in teams and project teams which have one or more products in its development. And over the years, I've worked on a number of products in specifically early development and more recently in late stage development.
It's interesting because I guess when we think of Pfizer, we typically think of a company that focuses on drugs that focus on treating high blood pressure, cardiovascular disease, and CNS diseases. But yet, Pfizer really now has become a major player in the field of oncology.
That is correct. When I joined, we had a very interesting pipeline, but outside, we were not well known for our cancer research. More recently, both with the development of that pipeline, as with the merger with Pharmacia, we have become a partner in the industry, moving some of those products forward.
And in fact, how much of Pfizer's portfolio is committed specifically for cancer drugs, cancer treatments?
So more recently, over the last few years, clearly there has been an explosion of the investments and the commitment of Pfizer in oncology. Approximately 20% of our research and development budget, which is approximately $7 billion, is committed to the development of new cancer drugs.
Yeah, so that's pretty significant investment on Pfizer's part.
It's a very significant investment, and we are very hopeful that we can deliver better medicines for cancer patients in the future.
And again, for our listeners out there, you're based on the eastern part of Connecticut, is that right?
I'm indeed based. Pfizer has its R&D headquarters in Groton, New London, here in Connecticut. Regarding oncology, with the acquisition and mergers of other companies, the oncology group is based here in Connecticut, in La Jolla, and in Milan, Italy.
Hmm. So it's obviously local here to Connecticut, but also really a global pharmaceutical company.
Definitely a global pharmaceutical company.
Now, before coming to Pfizer, you said that you were at the Cancer Therapy and Research Center at San Antonio, Texas. And again, for those of us, for those listening out there, the CTRC, also known as the Institute for Drug Development, really, I think, has been viewed as one of the leading preeminent cancer drug development centers in the country. I'm just curious, how was your experience when you were there in San Antonio?
So when I trained in medical oncology, it became evident that you're only as good as a physician or in helping the patients as good as the drugs are. So my focus quickly shifted to clinical cancer research and went to work at a center in the Netherlands, in the Rotterdam, which was well known for its early cancer drug development. And from there, had the opportunity to work with indeed some of the best mentors in the States for early cancer drug development.
Yeah, namely Drs. Dan Van Hoff and Eric Rowinsky, Tony Tolcher.
We're all present there, and they are a pleasure to work with. They have been great mentors to me, both from a technical perspective as a reflection of patient care.
And it's curious, right, because one wouldn't think of San Antonio as being a hotbed for cancer drug development. Yet at that time, I think it's probably fair to say, and even to this day, that any interesting new compound that was being developed usually found its way through San Antonio.
It was a quite fascinating period indeed, and many new targeted agents, as we call them, which were developed as alternative for the more toxic chemotherapy agents, were being developed. And San Antonio, having a focus on phase one drug development, really grew significantly in the number of projects and trials that they were able to manage and lead within that center. And I think the key leadership of Dr. Vonov and Eric Rowinsky, and subsequently Tony Tolcher, has really helped put them on the map of cancer drug development.
Now, you mentioned just a little while ago targeted therapies. Maybe you can explain for our listeners out there, what does targeted therapy mean?
When we say targeted therapy, we mean the treatment of cancer by specifically focusing on one or more what we call drug targets, which are either proteins or other or other elements in the cancer cell pathway, which helps it survive. By targeting those specific proteins, we can affect and effectively kill cancer cells without being too toxic to the normal cells in the body.
So in essence, we're trying to develop magic bullets.
In essence, yes.
That hopefully are much safer for the patients who are taking these medicines.
That is, of course, what we're aiming for, is more effective drugs who are better tolerated.
Now, obviously, being at San Antonio and now in your current role at Pfizer, you've seen the entire spectrum of cancer drug development. And I think, you know, a lot of people don't quite appreciate how long it takes to actually bring a drug from the laboratory and bring it all the way into clinical trials and then eventually into everyday practice. Can you explain a little bit about how that process
I'll be happy to.
Works? Yeah.
I think first of all, it is the understanding of the biology which is critical in identifying which target we would focus on in effectively being able to treat cancer. There are many potential targets out there, and we'll have to make a selection on which targets are what we call druggable, which targets can we indeed affect with some of the new and future medications. Secondly, then, our chemists, which are really extraordinary in their development of really new molecules, which are able to selectively affect those targets, work on such a new compound, and that takes at least 4, 5, 6 years, sometimes even longer, just to identify a molecule or molecules which can be effective versus a certain target. Subsequently, those new molecules or medicines in early phase will have to be tested for its safety and efficacy in early clinical models. So they not yet in patients, but in cell cultures or in some animal models, which we need to test the efficacy of these drugs. After which, once all that information is gathered, once it is closely scrutinized, we will go with a large package of information to the health authorities and the FDA, and request the opportunity to test these agents in patients.
And how would you describe the relationship, say, between pharma, your company, Pfizer, and the regulatory agencies, either the National Cancer Institute, NIH, as well as the FDA?
I think in essence, that relationship is viewed by us as a partnership. The reason is that, of course, they have their primary objectives of regulatory action. We have our focus in bringing new and better medicines forward. At the end of the day, we both want the same, and we want to develop those better drugs for patients. And so partnership, I think, is the essence.
So it's interesting, because I think a lot of times in the news and in the media, that relationship is sometimes portrayed as adversarial, and a lot of friction and tension between the pharmaceutical industry and, say, the FDA. But it sounds like your view is very different than that.
The perception and the way that we work with health authorities are always one that we need to come to consensus. Of course, we each have we sometimes have settings where we have differing views. And that a consensus has to be driven. And that is part of a healthy debate, a healthy learning. The health authorities have their experience, not just having been exposed to products from Pfizer, but also from other industry, other pharmaceutical companies. And as such, they might have insights which we, with our even extensive package, might not have. On the other hand, clearly by working for so many years on a specific drug, there is and with having the top-notch scientists in our labs working on these products, there is definitely a significant level of experience within industry side also on those specific compounds. Mm-hmm. So opportunities for healthy debate, but at the end of the day, we need to come to consensus.
Sure. And how would you, say, compare the experience that you had when you were in San Antonio, which obviously is viewed as a top-notch academic center, and now your experience at Pfizer with respect to the drug development process and the decisions that are made with respect to moving forward with a particular agent?
I think first and foremost, the early drug development, which was the focus in San Antonio, it has a number of aspects. There was in the Institute for Drug Development also focus of some of the more discovery and laboratory-based research. So we had that integration and then trying to translate that to the clinic. The opportunity which Pfizer and the industry offers is the opportunity to really follow a specific drug from its inception to bringing it to the clinic in the further stages of development and potentially and hopefully to a successful approval and being able to be utilized for patient care.
So obviously, I guess the drug development process at Pfizer is a much more involved, lengthy, it's a broader process than,
The drug development process by itself is a lengthier process. I think the Pfizer provided the opportunity to have that all within one organization, where you move along with the product. Different challenges at different stages of development, but definitely it is a very exciting place to be as we really feel that we are helping progress within cancer research.
Okay, great. Well, we'd like to remind you to email your questions to canceranswers@yale.edu or call 1-888-234-4YCC. At this point, we're going to take a short break for a medical minute. Please stay tuned to learn more information about the process of cancer drug development with Dr. Louis Denny from Pfizer Oncology.
Breast cancer is the second most common cancer in women. About 3,000 women in Connecticut will be diagnosed with breast cancer this year. But earlier detection, non-invasive treatments, and new therapies are providing more options for breast cancer patients, and more women are able to live with breast cancer than ever before. Beginning at age 40, every woman should schedule an annual mammogram, and you should start even sooner if you have risk factors associated with breast cancer. Screening, early detection, and a healthy lifestyle are the most important factors in defeating breast cancer. Clinical trials are currently underway at federally designated comprehensive cancer centers, such as the Yale Cancer Center, to make new treatments not yet approved by the Food and Drug Administration available to patients. This has been a Medical Minute, and you'll find more information at yalecancercenter.org. You're listening to the WNPR Health Forum from Connecticut Public Radio.
So maybe, Louis, what we can do now is give the listeners out there a sense of the types of clinical trials that are involved as we try to develop a new agent in the clinical setting.
Okay. So let me start indeed to address the question, why a clinical trial?
Okay, terrific.
And I think it is key to understand that when we develop these agents, that we need accurate and scientifically rigid data to make decisions continuing to develop a drug forward. There are always questions to be asked, which we call the hypothesis, which need to be addressed in the setting of a well-designed clinical trial. At the stages of development, once a drug comes into the clinic, the initial focus, of course, is safety. What is the safety profile of this drug? What is the tolerability? What are the potential side effects? Within that first trial, which we call the phase one trial, our overall aim is to objectively and in a well-defined fashion really describe and characterize the safety profile of an agent. While we do that, we in steps escalate the dose of the drug until we reach a dose, what we would call a maximum tolerated dose or a recommended dose. At that moment, we would have a dose which could be used for further trials. Historically, those initial trials were solely focused on on safety, and not as much on other components. Currently, of course, with the understanding and better and improved knowledge on the biology, we're really focusing on biomarkers, on other parameters such as specific imaging techniques to understand if at that dose we're actually hitting the target, as we earlier discussed.
And that really is a key issue, because what we'd like to do is get away from empiric therapy and hopefully develop therapies that are hitting specific targets.
That is absolutely correct. And when we do it in the more integrated way and include some of those biomarkers in the early stages of development, we gain more and more confidence in bringing the drug then to subsequent and larger trials.
Now, in phase one studies, do you tend to focus on a particular disease, or do you include patients that may have a wide range of cancer types?
Many times we do realize that these drugs which we bring to the clinic for testing do not have a proven efficacy profile and not even a proven safety profile. So these are truly experimental agents. We gain more and better insight with the improved methods that we and models that we have before going into the clinic. We will have a good understanding of the safety profile of these agents, but still these are truly experimental agents. So many times these drugs are being administered to patients who have previously received standard treatments, and we offer the opportunity then to participate in such a trial to patients with all tumor types.
So if a drug successfully goes through phase one and it's found to be safe and there's a hint that it may be active in particular types of cancer, what's the next stage of clinical trials?
So within that first setting, sometimes we have some hints of activity, and this happens more and more because we better understand the biology, and we sometimes do target once we have reached a dose which we deem to be safe and potentially effective. Subsequently, we move to phase two trials, where we really ask the question, is this drug effective in some specific tumor types? Now, it could be specific tumor types or even within a certain type of cancer. There are several subsets, as we call, cancer types which express a specific target. Mm-hmm. And as such, we conduct a number of those trials, and again want to emphasize these trials are not conducted by Pfizer, they are conducted by investigators like yourself in close partnership with the pharmaceutical industry. We move and then test those drugs in phase two trial for efficacy.
And I think that maybe is a very important point to emphasize to our listeners, that you work very closely with academic cancer centers throughout the country. And really that also highlights the close interactions and collaborations that need to take place between industry, academic centers, and then, as you say, also ultimately with the National Cancer Institute and the FDA.
That is absolutely correct. We have a focus on quality of clinical trials, and as such work with key investigators such as yourself, Dr. Chu, who have extensive experience in patient care and management, and who can really help lead the development process of some of these agents. So I think much of the credit really has to go to the investigators, and particularly the patients participating in those trials.
Absolutely. And so when we go from phase two, we then go to phase three. And tell us a little bit about what phase three studies are all about.
So we are at the stage then that we have successfully passed phase one. And in some of the phase two trials, we have some suggested evidence of activity. At a certain moment, once some critical evidence of activity has been demonstrated, we like to refer that as proof of concept, which we then could be a trigger to confirm that efficacy in larger clinical trials, the so-called phase three clinical trials. These clinical trials are really conducted to almost definitively answer the question, does the use of this drug help improve the outcome of the patient? It are these type of well-conducted clinical trials which we all and the health authorities rely on to answer the question if such a drug could be considered for approval and wider use in patients.
And so typically, how long does the process take, say, from starting with the very first phase one study to the completion analysis of the randomized phase three trial?
That can be a very significant period of time. 10, 12 years is what we are experiencing at this moment. We are heavily focused in accelerating that process. The science is improving significantly. We have a better understanding on how to apply that information that we gain of earlier trials. And what we see now more and more is that while we learn, we improve the process. Historically, it had been indeed phase one, followed by phase two, followed by phase three. Now we conduct what we would call then a phase one early trial, but with the biomarkers, with an early evidence of imaging, we already can get some hints of efficacy in those very early studies. Mm-hmm. Subsequently, if we have sufficient confidence, trial design could indeed morph into what we call phase 2-3 trials, where we try to accelerate asking the question, getting the early evidence of activity, and then rapidly moving into the confirmatory part of such a trial. Some hurdles around it because we continue to learn, and by merging these stages of development, you don't really have the opportunity to fully apply the learnings and of your earlier trials, and that is where judgment comes in, and that we need to understand if we can really move aggressively and fast, or that we do the tried and tested way of stage development.
Certainly, I would think that cancer patients would desperately want to see the whole process accelerated, so they'd have access to newer, hopefully more effective, safer therapies. I'm just curious, how has the FDA viewed this process of trying to accelerate drug development?
From our perspective, it has been clear that the FDA has been clearly focusing on accelerating the process. I think in the oncology setting particularly, there is the opportunity of obtaining what is called an accelerated approval. These are very stringent criteria for such an accelerated approval. But if a drug is indeed developed and shown to can contribute significantly to a patient population in heavy need of new medications, the process allows it to become available, while from the clinical research perspective, we continue to conduct subsequent trials to continue to get more and more information to confirm those initial findings. It's very important to stress that the drug development process doesn't really end with the approval. Following approval, there is continued monitoring, both from the industry as from the FDA.
And in particular, to look at whether or not there are new or different side effects that may be coming out.
Absolutely. There are always the surprises, but there are sometimes also settings where more and more data just confirms the improved safety profile that one of these drugs could have.
Mm-hmm. And I guess one question that's always asked of me, Louis, is, you know, why are these drugs so expensive, you know, to the patients? And obviously, the cynical view is that the pharmaceutical industry is trying to make these huge profits. But it just sounds like, right, that the whole process takes so long, requires so many different steps, that it's not hard to imagine that this is also a very costly endeavor.
It is a very costly endeavor. And before moving there, would like to point out that overall, the cost of healthcare, the cost of drugs is only 10% of the total cost. What we're really trying to do is develop better treatments overall. It's because of the importance of doing scientifically and stringent clinical research, heavy investment have to be made in designing the right trials, executing the right trials, gathering the data, gathering the information, and that is indeed a very costly process. What drives up the cost mostly, however, is the fact that many of these drugs which we develop do not even make it to the clinic. Mm-hmm. We're very hopeful, we're very excited, and I've recently experienced where Pfizer had invested largely in the development of a new immunologic agent. Phase two trials conducted, suggestion of improvement of overall survival for those patients. We conduct two large phase three trials on a global scale. Very committed, very excited, and unfortunately the results did not pan out. And those are also costs which have to be taken into account.
So just real quick, so roughly how much would it take to get one drug through the entire process and approved by the FDA? Can you give some ballpark figure?
I do not have a ballpark figure available. I've heard the cost of $1 billion raised, but it might even be higher than that.
And what's the chance of a drug actually starting from phase one to getting approval? What's the betting odds?
The betting odds it has been improving. I would say 1 in 40 would be low. It might even be that it is less. Your perspective, Ed?
Yeah, well, it's tough odds, actually. And I think what I've heard is 1 to 20, 1 to 40. So anyway, Louis, I just want to thank you so much for being our guest today. And hopefully we'll have you back on a future show to hear more about what's going on at Pfizer Oncology. Until next week, this is Dr. Ed Chu from the Yale Cancer Center, wishing you a safe and healthy week.
If you have questions, comments, or would like to subscribe to our podcast, go to yalecancercenter.org, where you'll also find transcripts of past broadcasts in written form. Next week, Ken Miller speaks with Dr. Robert Udelsman about thyroid cancer.